Chapter 58. For there must surely be searching parties on the road before this time, yet we had seen no sign of them. Demoralization was spreading. Something must be done, and done quickly too. Fortunately, I am not unfertile in expedients. I contrived one now which commended itself to all, for it promised well. I took 3/4 of a mile of rope, and fastened one end of it around the waist of a guide, and told him to go find the road, while the caravan waited. I instructed him to guide himself back by the rope, in case of failure. In case of success, he was to give the rope a series of violent jerks, whereupon the expedition would go to him at once. He departed, and in 2 minutes had disappeared among the trees. I paid out the rope myself, while everybody watched the crawling thing with eager eyes. The rope crept away quite slowly, at times, at other times with some briskness. Twice or thrice we seemed to get the signal, and a shout was just ready to break from the men's lips, when they perceived it was a false alarm. But at last, when over half a mile of rope had slidden away, it stopped gliding, and stood absolutely still 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3, while we held our breath and watched. Was the guide resting? Was he scanning the country from some high point? Was he inquiring of a chance mountaineer? Stop, had he fainted from excess of fatigue and anxiety? This thought gave us a shock. I was in the very first act of detailing an expedition to succor him, when the cord was assailed with a series of such frantic jerks, that I could hardly keep hold of it. The huzza that went up, then, was good to hear. Aved. Saved. Was the word that rang out, all down the long rank of the caravan. We rose up and started at once. We found the route to be good enough for a while, but it began to grow difficult, by and by, and this feature steadily increased. When we judged we had gone half a mile, we momently expected to see the guide. But no, he was not visible anywhere. Neither was he waiting, for the rope was still moving. Consequently, he was doing the same. This argued that he had not found the road, yet, but was marching to it with some peasant. There was nothing for us to do, but plod along, and this we did. At the end of 3 hours we were still plodding. This was not only mysterious, but exasperating. And very fatiguing too, for we had tried hard, along at first, to catch up with the guide, but had only fagged ourselves, in vain. For although he was traveling slowly, he was yet able to go faster than the hampered caravan over such ground. At 3 in the afternoon we were nearly dead with exhaustion, and still the rope was slowly gliding out. The murmurs against the guide had been growing steadily, and at last they were become loud and savage. A mutiny ensued. The men refused to proceed. They declared that we had been traveling over and over the same ground all day, in a kind of circle. They demanded that our end of the rope be made fast to a tree, so as to halt the guide until we could overtake him and kill him. This was not an unreasonable requirement, so I gave the order. As soon as the rope was tied, the expedition moved forward with that alacrity which the thirst for vengeance usually inspires. But after a tiresome march of almost half a mile, we came to a hill covered thick with a crumbly rubbish of stones, and so steep, that no man of us all was now in a condition to climb it. Every attempt failed, and ended in crippling somebody. Within 20 minutes I had 5 men on crutches. Whenever a climber tried to assist himself by the rope, it yielded and let him tumble backward. The frequency of this result suggested an idea to me. I ordered the caravan to bout face and form in marching order. I then made the tow rope fast to the rear mule, and gave the command. Mark time by the right flank, forward march. The procession began to move, to the impressive strains of a battle chant, and I said to myself, now, if the rope don't break, I judge this will fetch that guide into the camp. I watched the rope gliding down the hill, and presently when I was all fixed for triumph I was confronted by a bitter disappointment. There was no guide tied to the rope, it was only a very indignant old black ram. The fury of the baffled expedition exceeded all bounds. They even wanted to wreak their unreasoning vengeance on this innocent, dumb brute. But I stood between them and their prey, menaced by a bristling wall of ice axes and alpenstocks, and proclaimed that there was but one road to this murder, and it was directly over my corpse. Even as I spoke, I saw that my doom was sealed, except a miracle supervened to divert these madmen from their fell purpose. I see the sickening wall of weapons now. I see that advancing host as I saw it then. I see the hate in those cruel eyes. I remember how I drooped my head upon my breast. I feel again the sudden earthquake shock in my rear, administered by the very ram I was sacrificing myself to save. I hear once more the typhoon of laughter that burst from the assaulting column as I clove it from van to rear like a sepoy shot from a Rodman gun. I was saved. Yes, I was saved, and by the merciful instinct of ingratitude which nature had planted in the breast of that treacherous beast, the grace which eloquence had failed to work in those men's hearts had been wrought by a laugh. The ram was set free and my life was spared. We lived to find out that that guide had deserted us as soon as he had placed a half mile between himself and us. To avert suspicion, he had judged it best that the line should continue to move, so he caught that ram, and at the time that he was sitting on it making the rope fast to it, we were imagining that he was lying in a swoon, overcome by fatigue and distress. When he allowed the ram to get up, it fell to plunging around, trying to rid itself of the rope, and this was the signal which we had risen up with glad shouts to obey. We had followed this ram round and round in a circle all day, a thing which was proven by the discovery that we had watered the expedition 7 times at one and same spring in 7 hours. As expert a woodman as I am, I had somehow failed to notice this until my attention was called to it by a hog. This hog was always wallowing there, and as he was the only hog we saw, his frequent repetition, together with his unvarying similarity to himself, finally caused me to reflect that he must be the same hog, and this led me to the deduction that this must be the same spring, also, which indeed it was. I made a note of this curious thing, as showing in a striking manner the relative difference between glacial action and the action of the hog. It is now a well-established fact that glaciers move. I consider that my observations go to show, with equal conclusiveness, that a hog in a spring does not move. I shall be glad to receive the opinions of other observers upon this point. To return, for an explanatory moment, to that guide, and then I shall be done with him. After leaving the ram tied to the rope, he had wandered at large a while, and then happened to run across a cow. Judging that a cow would naturally know more than a guide, he took her by the tail, and the result justified his judgment. She nibbled her leisurely way downhill till it was near milking time, then she struck for home, and towed him into Zermatt. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.